Hollywood is under siege from an external force. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream is now making nightmares a reality. Many major films appease the Chinese Communist Party to be distributed in China. Join Tiffany Meyer, an investigative reporter, in Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, where she reveals how the CCP has infiltrated major studios. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Hear about it. Talk about it.
You guys are talking about everything that I just wanted to ask about.
55 KRC, the talk station.
The 55 KRC, the talk station. It's Friday. Knew that was coming. Thank you, Joe Strecker. Woohoo for Friday. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to have Joe Strecker as executive producer and glad to look at a rundown like the one I've got this morning. Come in the show and find out I got a full day worth of guests, which I absolutely adore. Beginning with Tech Friday, Dave Hatter at 6:30, as we always talk with Dave. Didn't have any notes. Got a few articles on his agenda. Why hackers love smart buildings. Phishing attacks. 1 in 3 suspect emails reported by employees really are malicious. Yeah, there's that much going on out there. And how Walgreens' sloppy COVID-19 test registration system exposed patient data. COVID-19, creeping into the tech world as well. Followed by Tech Friday at 6:30, we hear from Mark Hoover. Catch My Killer podcast. We've had Mark on a bunch of times by now. We're going to talk about the Bill and Peggy Stevenson case. Always interesting. This old cold cases are pretty wild. And, you know, Mark talking about them, they might come up with somebody who's got, oh, yeah, I remember that, and have a little bit of information to pass along to the police. Who knows? Betsy Sunderman returns at 7:40 to talk about the job fair at the Hard Rock Casino, the Western Hills Viaduct, which we learned from the Sorta Board president yesterday. The money's coming from the tax to shore up the additional funds that the Western Hills Viaduct needed. Of course, there were some state, local, and federal allocations. They had, I think, accumulated about $125 million from those three sources, and the 0.8% bus tax that we all voted for. Remember, a giant chunk, well, not a giant chunk, 30% of that was for infrastructure. So from that 30%, we're taking $200+ million and shoring up the balance needed. I was happy to hear that at least they've got the funds. That project, of course, is a necessary one. We can argue about the necessity of various projects, but no one seems to be arguing it's not necessary. So we'll see what Betsy has to say on that, maybe even a timetable. And finally, it being campaign season, we'll hear what Betsy has to say about that. Since the candidates are all shored up, her being one of them, we are coming fast upon the November election, like it or not. Look, oh, it's already halfway through September. Ron Wilson, yay! Love Fridays when Ron Wilson's in at 8:05. Of course, always an informative and less political. We don't usually dive into politics with Ron, which is welcome relief on a Friday as we move into the weekend. Frank LaRose, he returns to the program at 8:30, talking about the 4-year redistricting map. And a lot of people a little upset about the 4-year thing. Republicans went 4 years rather than 10 in order to, well, get their way. That's okay. That's what happens when you're in power. Jason Williams, Politics Extra, Cincinnati Inquirer, 8:40, returns to talk about why are the Dems fighting Tom Brinkman? And there is your lineup. And, of course, every day on the 55 KRC Morning Show includes phone calls, and you are welcome to call and comment. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phone. Not quite sure which direction to go first this morning. Let me see here. Pick a hand, Joe. Pick a hand. Right hand. Okay, we'll start with COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Rather than the bridge under which we have 8,000 now migrants, a lot of Haitians. But this one, since we've been talking so much about religious exemptions of late, this one, Joe had in my stack when I came in this morning, because Joe does show prep and I do show prep, I had this one as well, and here this one left me scratching my head. I've been talking about the how could anybody test the validity of your religious conviction insofar as you don't want to take the COVID-19 vaccine because it violates your religious convictions. Now, remember, the religious conviction violation could probably come from a variety of areas. Some, underscore the word some, meaning not all, religious exemptions are brought about because some have related the vaccine and the development of the vaccine with fetal cells. Now, my understanding is the fetal cells that are used anyway were from long, long ago, and that they developed them in a lab. So we're not talking about, you know, recently aborted fetuses, but, you know, whatever. That is the basis for some religious exemptions. Others, as I pointed out in the past, like Christian Scientists, don't believe in interventions when it comes to medicine. Your body gets sick, your body's going to heal itself, or you'll die, whatever, God's will. That has nothing to do necessarily with abortion. It just has everything to do with, you know, God's will, I suppose. I'm no theologian, and I'm not a Christian Scientist. That's just my understanding. No one's corrected me on that, so I think I have at least some thumbnail sketch grasp of it. There may be other religious arguments. Let's face it, religion is a very personal thing, and this is why the government shouldn't be interfering in it. So when government can't interfere in it, we leave it up to businesses to interfere with it. We go to Arkansas, where we have a hospital system that is now making it, well, they describe as slightly more difficult to get a religious exemption for COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Of course, it's a hospital system, so it's got a mandate requiring staff to also swear, attest in a form that they are not using common medicines. We'll get to the list of common medicines in a moment. But the staff, and I know this to be the case because I know people who work for other hospital systems. And when you have the vaccine mandate being poured down upon you, all the healthcare workers must be vaccinated or be tested, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you know. A lot of people will say, I'm religious. Knowing full well, as I've been pointing out, how in the hell are they going to test whether or not I'm religious or not? I don't want to take the vaccine. I'm going to fill out the form saying I have a religious exemption. I'm free of it. Well, there's clearly going to be an uptick in those. Obviously, because there's not been a situation like this before, this pandemic-induced, unapproved, at least for a very long time, vaccine. Temporary use authorization kind of thing. So we have a slightly different situation than the annual flu vaccine going on here. Anyway, according to Matt Troop, president and CEO of Conway Regional Health System, said this was a significantly disproportionate to what we've seen with the influenza vaccine, comparing the number of people requesting religious exemptions to, well, of course, the flu vaccine obligations. Thus, he said, we provided a religious attestation form for those individuals requesting a religious exemption. The form includes a list of 30 commonly used medications that, quote, fall into the same category as the COVID-19 vaccine and their use of fetal cell lines. And those are the lines I was talking about. You have original fetal cells, kind of, you know, harvested some years ago, and then they continue to manufacture those or reproduce them in a clinical setting or in a research setting. The list in the religious attestation form includes the following drugs: Tylenol, Pepto-Bismol, aspirin, Tums, Lipitor, Senecot, Motrin, Ibuprofen, Maalox, X-Lax, Benadryl, Sudafed, Abuterol, Preparation H. Preparation H! Didn't know about that one, did you, huh? MMR vaccine, Claritin, Zoloft, Prilosec, OTC, and azithromycin. Conway Regional notes that the list includes commonly used and available drugs, but that it is not an all-inclusive list of those medicines. Employees are asked to attest that they, in the form's statement, truthfully acknowledge and affirm that my sincerely held religious belief is consistent and true, and that they do not and will not use any of the medications or any others like them. Now, Troop, this The hospital CEO said the intent of the forum is twofold. First, the hospital wants to ensure that the staff members are sincere in their stated beliefs. And second, he wants to educate staff who might have requested an exemption without understanding the full scope of how fetal cells are used in testing and development in common medicines. He said that employees who don't sign the attestation form will be granted a provisional exemption, which is temporary, but they may be asked to sign the attestation later. And as the form notes, if they fail to get an exemption or a vaccine, they face disciplinary action, including termination, of course. In an interview with local news there, Troop noted that only about 5% of the hospital system staff had filed for a religious and medical exemption, and the rest of the workforce is partially or fully vaccinated. There you go. I guess that's one method of testing, but let's face it. If you were ignorant, and there is some, and I didn't do any research to know how much fetal cell tissue is used in the development of Tylenol. But if you didn't know that, and it was, maybe you're further enlightened now. And maybe you have just now have a larger list of drugs that you won't take because of your deeply held religious convictions. That is for you to decide, much in the same way the vaccine should be for you to decide. 515.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Go to hell.
There you are. Projecting my wife right there. 520 and a very happy Friday to you. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter coming up at 6:30. In the meantime, a word for Lemmy. Little fun games there. Get you out of bed on a Friday. All right, I always do Stack is Stupid. The first time you're listening right now in the 5 o'clock hour, I do Stack is Stupid beginning at 5:40. Or I take phone calls either way, although I feel it necessary to dive into the Stack is Stupid early, although this isn't in the Stack is Stupid. It was in the right-hand selection stack that Joe talked about, which is why I brought up that whole hospital staff having to attest to swearing off Tylenol if you didn't want the COVID-19 vaccine. Let us turn to San Francisco, where they have entered into the realm of epic, stupid, crazy, dumb, call it what you want. We're living in the Twilight Zone. Joe, you have actually run a 5K, haven't you? Couple of them. I remember when you were at the height of your, you know, weight loss program and the height of your exercise program. And that was, that, to me, that's impressive because I have never run a 5K before. I can't remember the last time I ran. I think it was when I was swimming for the Cincinnati Marlins. So we got to go way back to like junior high school or something. Anyway, never been a runner. If you saw my feet, which look like boards, they have no arches, you would understand. It's a painful thing for me. Plus, I just hate it. So you'll never see me running in a marathon, especially one where you got to wear a mask. Joe, can you imagine running a 5K in a mask? That is so stupid. I know. And it's only for part of the race. Participants in the San Francisco Marathon are going to have to wear a mask on portions of the course. This was an announcement from just the other day. Race health protocols that were released over the last couple weeks. Stretches of Sunday's marathon, half marathon, and 10K races, as well as all of Saturday's 5K, happen to take place in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area that is run by the National Park Service. The National Park Service agency announced last month masks are required indoors and, in their words, in crowded outdoor spaces that are on park property. Runners who don't wear a mask could be fined by the National Park Service or face race disqualification. This, according to the race officials, National Park Service has said visitors who violate the mask requirement on its properties may be subject to citations as appropriate. Public affairs specialist with the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, Julian Espinoza, sent an email out to the event's organizers are responsible for the mask enforcement. That means those people who are so kind as to stand there, hand out water, cheer you on, the race organizers, and they're always volunteers. Usually these things are like charitable events, and everybody who's out there with a race T-shirt on, handing out water or sending directions, signing people up, man, they're not getting paid for their time. Now, those are the people that are going to be responsible for yelling at a runner who goes by a portion of the race run, that section of the run or that chunk of the run that happens to just be through the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. If you're in there, they're going to be screaming at you. It's their fault. They have to enforce this stupid rule. Remember, you're outdoors, for God's sake. Production director for the marathon told local news there, runners won't immediately be pulled from the course, but they could be disqualified if officials get word that they weren't wearing a mask. Get your cell phone out, take a picture of the mask violator, get his number or her number, and report him to the authorities. We need to kick him out. Quoted as saying, those portions are significantly more congested than the roadways around San Francisco, so we're just doing our part to help mitigate any transmission. We'll have all of our course volunteers in masks. Of course we will. We'll actually have signage for mask zones and where those end. And think, envision this.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
You're running. You enter mask zone. You do your duty. You put your mask on. Of course, it'll be a little more difficult to actually participate in the race and breathe with it on. And then you run into the sign that says remove mask. And then 1 foot in front of it, you have to have the mask on. And a foot behind the sign, you're free to not wear a mask. Because God knows that you can't get a transmission in the mask area. And that if once you're out of the national park area, you can't get transmission without the mask because you're not in a park area. And if you can explain this one to me, please let me know. Because this doesn't make any blanking sense. 525 right now, 55 Carry City Talk Station. By 30 on a Friday, and a happy one to you. Yeah, it just says slight chance of rain tomorrow. It's not going to rain. Got that Dragonfly charity run, motorcycle run. I hope you can make it. It's going to be a good time. Queen City Harley-Davidson up on Route 4 Fairfield. You got to get signed in before 10:45. I think sign-up begins at 9. You get the details on my blog page, 55KRC.com. But great opportunity to support a fantastic charity. Those Dragonfly Foundation folks helping out families that have children who have been diagnosed and are being treated for cancer here in Cincinnati Children's Hospital. It's like, wow, you know, and they come from all over. A lot of poor parents, a lot of folks just coming to the Cincinnati Children's Hospital to get great quality medical attention for, again, I mean, children with cancer. Gee, many Christmas, can you find a more sympathetic cause? Well, Dragonfly couldn't. That's why they founded themselves, and that's why we are supporting them. So show up, ride, have fun. I think it's $20 a head. Five extra bucks for your two up, your pillion. And if you register on race or on ride day, which is again tomorrow, it's going to be $25 plus an extra $5 for your two up. So hope to see you there. Get the information on my blog page, or just go to Queen City Harley Davidson or look up Dragonfly Foundation. You'll find the information there. Hey Tom, happy Friday to you. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. I guess the best question really is, what is not in the stack of stupid anymore?
You're right. Yeah.
You might be having one segment a day for non-stupid crap.
I know.
Especially with all the liberals in charge. So,
well, you know, and it's funny because I asked Joe, I had a stack in my right hand and a stack in my left. He picked the stack that happened to be the one that I read. But in the other stack, the headline, I did read the article, the FAA has banned drone flights around bridge.
So, that's not stupid at all.
I mean, come on. Where all those migrants are gathered, they doubled from 4,000 to 8,000 people under one bridge, all of whom are waiting to be arrested. And the FAA says, we're going to ban drone flights around there. It's like,
Just a coincidence. Nothing to see. Right. Nothing nefarious behind that. So the thing personally for me that shows how stupid this is, I've worked down at the airport recently, and they're working on that new rent-a-car center, and there was a dividing wall between the part of the airport that's open where you check your bags in and the rent-a-car place. And the wall for a longest time went from floor all the way up to the roof. Well, after a while, they tore most of the wall down where it was only an eight-foot partition between the part that's under construction and the part where passengers are at. And on our side, you didn't have to wear a mask. And we could be like right on the other side of the wall, and even like up on a lift or a scaffold, right on the other side of the wall, didn't have to wear a mask. Literally, we ask, it's not required, but the people on the other side of this little 4-inch wall, they got to wear a mask.
There you go, man. Like,
how ridiculously stupid is this?
Well, you know,
that's why you don't vote Democrat. Thanks, Brian.
Take care, Tom. Otherwise, well, that could have been a super spreader event if you were not wearing a mask on one side of the wall. You can't make any sense of this. You know, none. Over to local stories. Here's an interesting development. Cincinnati Police Department is not allowed to use race or sex-based goals in hiring or when awarding promotion. This according to a federal judge ruling from on Wednesday. U.S. District Judge Susan DeLotte decision surrounds a consent decree from 1981 that was intended to address discrimination against black people and women in both hiring as well as promotions to sergeant. Thank you, Kevin Grasha and Choir, reporting. City was hoping to maintain the policy, which said 34% of all new hires must be black and 23% of all new hires must be women. Doesn't that sound arbitrary? On its face, 34. Where do they get 34? Where do they get 23? Don't know. Also said black officers and women officers must comprise at least 25% of promotions to sergeant. Now you got to pause and think, okay, that is a specific finite limit, and therefore that means people who might not qualify as much as those who have been overlooked would get promoted anyway. This is probably why the judge ruled the way she did. Anyway, Police Chief Elliot Isaac said in March a letter to President Joe Biden that his own career benefited from the consent decree. DeLotte, in ruling, said in 1980, about 10% of the department's workforce was black, less than 4% were women. By January of this year, 28% of the officers black, 23% women. Said the city failed to show a compelling governmental interest to justify continuing race or sex-based hiring. Said the city provided zero evidence that race-based goals are necessary to remedy a past discrimination or its lingering effects. In her opinion, she wrote, the city admits that efforts to diversity, CPD, have been relatively successful, and that the number of black officers have, in her words, held steady for the recent past. Regarding sex-based hiring and promotion, she said that given that 40 years has passed, remedying past discrimination no longer constitutes an important governmental interest. The recent challenge of consent decree began last year when a white officer sued the city, saying that he was passed over for promotion simply because he was white. Department of Justice then sought to modify parts of the decree by removing the hiring and promotional goals, saying that they were unconstitutional. DeLotte said, although at one time the hiring and promotional goals passed constitutional muster, that time has passed. There you are. So 536, 55 Care City Talk Station. Odor exit won't get...
John the Fisherman?
Must be Friday at 5:40. Oh, look, it is. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Pound 550 on your AT&T phone. Care to comment? Love to hear from you. Otherwise, we'll get into Stack of Stupid. But first, count it off. Let us dive on into the Stack of Stupid, since I had Mask Stupid earlier, the San Francisco Marathon, where runners need to wear masks just on portions of the race. God, it's so dumb. I'm channeling Jay Ratliff on this one. We got a mother and her two-year-old son forced to deplane an American Airlines flight, this on Monday, after the child could not keep the mask on. Amanda Penaveras posted in her Instagram story that she and her young son and her mom removed from the flight, said her son was having an asthma attack at the time he took his mask off. Flight 1284 had returned to the gate at Dallas-Fort Worth Airport before departing for Colorado after the party refused to comply with crew member instructions to remain seated while in an active taxiway and to wear face coverings securely over the nose and mouth. Airline said crew members were never made aware that the child was having an asthma attack or having issues with breathing. Additionally, passengers were not addressed for failure to comply with the face covering requirements at any point while administering treatment. Twitter user, who's such a friend of Petavaris, posted a series of images of the incident, which included one appearing to show her attempting to keep the mask on her son. 1 minute video appears to show the child screaming and crying while the mother tries to place the mask properly over his face. At one point, the child can be heard saying no while the woman repeatedly tries to settle him down. At the end of the clip, woman and child seen waiting in the jet bridge, met by authorities. That's so sad.
Dude, what the hell?
Two-year-old with asthma. And we move over to Alabama for this one. We have a mom jailed for beating up an 11-year-old that she suspected was bullying her kid on a school bus.
Dude, what the hell?
Keep your finger on the button, Joe. Nanette Walder, 37 years old, charged with the allegedly boarded yellow bus at Center Point. Then got into a fight with the elementary schooler she believed that had been picking on her kid. This, according to the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department, video of the fight emerged on social media. She was charged with assault, trespassing, and disorderly conduct. Dr. Walter Gonsolin, the superintendent of Jefferson County Schools, called the incident unacceptable. Yeah, I guess. It will not be tolerated, he said. Went on to say, well, this is now a law enforcement matter. Let me just say what I saw on that video deeply disturbs me. At no point is any type of violence acceptable, especially violence against students. Yep. A 37-year-old woman beating up an 11-year-old that she doesn't know, I would say, is pretty blank and stupid. That's why it's in the stack. Released from jail on Tuesday, Walder was, after posting a bond of $10,500, not immediately clear if the 11-year-old suffered injuries.
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
Yeah. I'll get one more in, Joe. Good. No? Real fast. I think I can do it. Man, we got a... Let's see. You can't use up my time. Man spotted by high school students pleasuring himself in the exact same Mercer County Park twice in a week, now facing several lewdness charges. Students at Hamilton High School noticed the naked guy touching himself in a disturbing manner near the tennis courts at Shady Brook Park. This around 3:30 in the afternoon on a Wednesday. After a brief foot chase, officers stopped 68-year-old Theodore Wright, charged him with obstruction and criminal sexual conduct. Tennis courts located in a park right next to the high school. 2 days later, several students saw naked Wright again in the park tennis courts, 3:15 in the afternoon on a Friday. Yes, he was doing it again. Wright ran off and eluded capture until Saturday when police arrested him at his Hamilton home, charged with criminal sexual conduct, lewdness, and endangering the welfare of a child. Hamilton Police to ask anybody with information about this incident. Since he apparently is a serial pleasure seeker in public, please give him a call. 545-55 KRC, the talk station. Time for me to mention Bond Furniture in beautiful. $5.50 Yeah, 55 KRCB Talk Station. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter coming up at 6:30, as always. And as always, we'll go back to the stack of stupid at this particular moment in the 5 o'clock hour. Man in custody after police found him naked, bathing in a sink.
As is tradition.
Oh, not just any sink. A sink at a state college laundromat.
As is tradition.
29-year-old Jeffrey Warui, with no known physical address, faces misdemeanor charges of indecent exposure and disorderly conduct after police arrived at the wash and dry laundry during the night of September 15th to find him doing laundry and bathing in the sink. 24/7 laundromat, police showed up. They came to find Warui standing next to the washing machine, completely naked. Police spoke with him. He explained that he was cleaning himself and washing his clothes. Police then instructed him to cover himself with a towel. Woman was trying to put her washed clothes into the dryer, but she was afraid of the naked guy, so another customer walked over with her so she could dry her clothes. Police told Rory to change in the bathroom once his clothes were finished washing and drying, and they warned him that if they had to come back for him being naked, that he would be going to jail. 12:30 p.m., police then received a call back at the laundromat for him being naked and bathing again in the sink. Police showed up, found him butt naked on a table, and arrested him. He's currently in Center County Jail with a monetary value bail of, what do you think, Joe? $5. That's awfully close, $250. I'd say that was well within the margin of error on that one. Currently awaiting a preliminary hearing. That's scheduled for next Wednesday. For one of $125. Actually, it's probably 10% of $125. We go to France for this one. The women of France actually wearing clothes now on the country's nude beaches. Just 19% of breasted sunbathers in the country now say they feel comfortable removing their tops at the beach. Compare that with 2009 when 34% that they feel A-okay with it, or in 1984 when 40% said that was just fine. Around half the respondents cited concerns. I'm shocked at this. Concerns that perverts would attack, harass, or otherwise violate them while they are topless.
What?
French pollster IFOP conducted the survey, including respondents from over 5,000 Europeans, including 1,000 French women. For 48% of the French women, physical safety was the primary concern. 46% said they feared photos of their bare chest might end up on social media. That's an interesting observation, because you go back to 1984, 40% of the people said that they were A-OK with nakedness on the beach. That's because there were no cell phones back then.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on hollywoodtakeover.com/free. That's hollywoodtakeover.com/free.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Women also exhibiting healthy fear of skin cancer, say 53% cover up because of that. Didn't realize it was such a big deal there. Anyway, this has been through the legal proceedings. There was a ban on nude beaches that was introduced in the 1970s, defeated in what is described as a landmark defeat. Topless sunbathing became a point of pride for the French progressives, a movement that appears to be evolving with the age of consent. Anyhow, perverts running amok. And we can get one more
come on,
in.
Man.
Lansing, Michigan has a number of problems that need professional help. But this is something, a horse of a different color. Lansing resident Amanda Helfer is saying, what is happening right now? That was her first thought after a man exposed himself in front of her and her children late Sunday afternoon in the corner of Grand and Oakland Avenues.
As is tradition.
Set a all frontal showing, shaking it, dancing, doing all kinds of stuff. Those are her words, not mine. She called 911. Man left before police showed up, and officers responded, recognized the description and behavior. I think it was the shaking it part was the part that they understood. It's like a modus operandi.
Phrasing?
Man left. They tracked him down not far from the scene, and he was arrested. Lansing Police Department said social worker Jan Bidwell said incidents happen more than people might think. It's really heartbreaking, she said, that we're seeing people suffer to this degree. Who's she referring to, naked wiggling guy or the woman who got exposed to the naked wiggling guy? She said it's an example of someone with a mental health disorder. Helping police deal with this kind of case is what she's hired to do. They need help. She said they see we need help with homeless citizens, mentally ill citizens, and with addiction. City added another social worker to the 2021-22 budget, so they've got enough staff to deal with naked wiggling guy. 556, 55 Care City Talk Station.
Kinky.
749-5500, 800-823 Talk. Be right back after the top of the hour news. Remember, Tech Friday with Dave Hatter coming up at 6:30.
When they say it,
cannot require someone to be vaccinated.
You'll hear about it.
Pandemic politics are making people sick.
On 55 KRC, the talk station.
It is 6:06, 55 KRC, the talk station, and a very, very happy Friday to you. Thanks again to Everyday Made It Listener Lunch on Wednesday, and thanks as always to Johnny Van Stein, listener who just takes it upon himself to bring his real nice camera and take some great pictures. He posted them yesterday. They're up on Facebook. I reposted them. And a salute to Dan Davis. He's a luthier, makes his own custom guitars. He made a tribute guitar for the C8 Corvette. It is an epic work of art. He's got mad skills as a luthier, but this thing is just a cut above. If you're a Corvette fan, Jim Kiefer just posted a picture of it. There's other ones within that mix that Johnny Van Stein took, but it's got all the different versions of the Corvettes from over the years around it in artwork form. It's got this beautiful artistic rendition of the new C8 on the back and all the design elements on the guitar from the pick guard to the neck and the machine heads. Everything is Corvette related. It's going to be on display, and maybe it is already at the Corvette Museum, at least for the next year or so, probably available for sale at some point. But whoa, it's just amazing, the craftsmanship. So a salute to Dan Davis and his custom guitars. Anyway, moving away from that and getting on to the other hand, the left-hand stack. And this, I'm going to go down to the bridge. This is something I wish more people were talking about. Representative Tony Gonzalez from Texas was there and did not have anything good to say about it. We're talking about the International Bridge in Del Rio. This is the place where you may have heard that there are literally thousands of immigrants, illegal immigrants, just milling around, and they have been for quite some time waiting to be arrested. There are benefits of being picked up and incarcerated by breaking into the United States of America. That's because they're going to put you on a bus and let you free without having to get a COVID vaccine, parenthetically. Gonzalez's district includes this Del Rio area. He was speaking with Fox News, said the camp has more now than 8,000 migrants. Quote, it's as bad as I've ever seen it, and I'm not taking that lightly. When you see the amount of people and how chaotic it is and how there is literally no border, folks are coming to and from Mexico with ease. It's gut-wrenching. It's dangerous. And I circled the words drone footage because this article relates to, of course, the amount of people standing around the Del Rio Bridge and under the International Bridge in Del Rio. But the reason we know about it is because we have drone footage that Fox News, for example, had taken earlier in the day, just showing the masses. On Wednesday, numbers were about 4,000. By Thursday morning, spiked to about 8,200. That's because you can analyze crowd numbers using the drone footage. I'm like, why does he keep mentioning drone footage? We'll get to that article in a second. Law enforcement sources said a large majority of them are Haitians. Fears that a whole lot more thousands of Haitians could be on the way to Del Rio. Gonzalez stressing that the situation was already, in his words, perilous in terms of the sanitary conditions as well as border security. Quote, the sheer amount of people, it's like getting hit by a 2x4. You think you're in a third world country, and this is the United States. This is Del Rio, Texas. And there is literally no border at all. It's just been muddied over. It's not children, it's mostly single men. He claims, Gonzalez does, triggered by Biden administration's move to cancel a number of repatriation flights to Haiti. If you cancel them, that means you're not going to be sent back to Haiti. Get it? Gonzalez said the cancellation of these repatriation flights has led not only to more migrants being rejected rather than repatriated, but it also sent a signal to Haitians that you better come out right now and get to the United States while you can. Well, and also then there's that loosening of the border protections like the Migrant Protection Protocol that used to keep migrants in Mexico until their hearings. That was a deterrent effect. That was the Trump administration's brilliant idea, and it was working. He said, these things are DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas can do today. Reinstate, remain in Mexico. Re-implement the repatriation flight. Send people back to their countries of origin. But they're not doing that, and that's what's causing the problem. He said more immediately he was concerned with the impact it's going to have on the small town of Del Rio, and you might want to consider that. It's not equipped to deal with the influx. He said, to feed these migrants, provide them three meals a day, will cost the city of Del Rio $1 million a week. He said, this is a small town. It doesn't have the resources, and yet they're literally having to come up with millions of dollars a week to handle this crisis. It is unfair to them. And then he pointed out, you know, there, but for the grace of God, go I, because Del Rio is dealing with it right now, but it's going to happen to you. It's going to have an impact on cities across the country. Gonzalez said, these folks are not staying in Texas. They're literally going to every city. They're going to Miami. They're going to Chicago. They're going to New York, San Francisco. They're going to a neighborhood near you, and it impacts everybody. Can your school district handle an influx like that? Can you imagine? Let's say among the 8,200 people currently standing there, and you know that's a moving target because, you know, 8,200, and that means like several thousand or pick a number, have already moved on, have gotten into the interior, maybe have been processed already and placed on a bus and are be heading to your neighborhood and your school district. Could you handle an influx like that overnight? At least with the progress of suburbs, you know, there's a new community that's being planned. They're going to build X number of houses. You know, somebody can factor into the equation what type of impact that's going to have long term over a school district, and they can adjust to deal with gradual population increases. They can't adjust to deal with, you know, wake up one day and you've got 19, 20, 30 busloads of school-age children that just got plopped in your lap. many of whom do not have any resources, which means they're also going to tax the welfare resources of any given area. Unbelievable. And then back to the drone footage. Jeez. Tell me there's nothing to see here. Federal Aviation Administration has now placed a two-week, random, yes, two-week flight restrictions around that bridge that I just mentioned. Huh. I wonder why. Fox News reporter Bill Malugan tweeted yesterday evening, we learned that the FAA just implemented a two-week temporary flight restrictions over the International Bridge in Del Rio, Texas, meaning we can no longer fly our Fox drone over it to show images of the thousands of migrants. FAA says special security reasons. Special. He said, we've reached out to the FAA to ask for clarification on why this TFR was implemented, temporary flight restriction. He also pointed out that Fox News has been using drones over there for months without a single incident. In a statement released yesterday evening, FAA said the Border Patrol requested the temporary flight restrictions due to the drones interfering with law enforcement flights on the border. As with any temporary flight restriction, media is able to call the FAA to make a request to operate in the area. Wondering out loud if any of those requests will be granted. They probably have a list of, you know, but like, well, if it's from Fox News, no, don't grant it. If CNN wants to bring a drone over, that's okay. They'll doctor it to make it look like this is no big deal. Anyway, as pointed out earlier, they got 8,200 or so migrants there waiting to be apprehended and processed. Large majority of the migrants, again, Haitians arriving by the bridge every minute. Referred to as a continued and relentless migrant surge that's overwhelmed authorities. Not shocking. They got rid of every conceivable working method that was put into place during the Trump administration to prevent this situation from happening. So on Biden's watch, this is Biden's doing. This is intentional, my friends. Absolutely intentional. You know, Joe or Donald Trump put something in place that acts as a deterrent. Look what we are doing now. You in Central America, you're not going to be making it into the United States until after your hearing. You're going to be in Mexico waiting it out. And you know how long it takes to get a hearing. You've heard the news. Yeah, you thought you were going to be released into the interior of the country and be hanging out for a couple of years before your hearing even showed up. And you wouldn't show up at it anyway. Can't do that anymore. You can be stuck in Mexico. You make the choice. The numbers drop precipitously. We're building a wall, by the way. You're not going to be able to get through it. We're beefing up security. The numbers drop precipitously. Biden comes in, gets rid of all the aforementioned and so much more. Look what happens. Cause and effect. Elections apparently have major consequences. 615, 55 KRC, the talk station. Cullen Electric. Proud they were to be, again, the Western and Southern EBN Fireworks Light the Fuse sponsor. They've extended all the way through the end of the month their discount in honor of that. Six 20, 55 KRC Talk Station. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter coming up in a matter of minutes. Isn't that cool? David seems to think so. I think it's cool. Love hearing what Dave has to say. And we'll do that briefly. And more border news. We've got a couple of other things going on. So we've got, actually, the number has increased. I kept referring to the doubling in one day, migrants from 4,000 under the International Bridge in Del Rio up to 8,200. Actually, the number is over 9,000. And in the last 5 minutes of the morning show, it probably increased even more than that. So a really frightening situation going on in there. Texas Governor Abbott is left to his own devices, and actually he is taking the ball and running with it because the Biden administration has turned its back on border security. Name all the reasons why he or in the administration might do that. Two things. First off, he announced yesterday Governor Abbott shutting down 6 points of entry between the U.S. Mexico in an effort to stop the flow of illegal immigrants, in his words, from overrunning our state. Abbott reported saying the sheer negligence of the Biden administration to do their job and secure the border is appalling. I've directed the Department of Public Safety and the Texas National Guard to surge personnel and vehicles to shut down 6 points of entry along the southern border to stop these caravans from overrunning our state. Border crisis is so dire that the U.S. Customs and Border Protection is requesting our help as their border agents are overwhelmed by the chaos. Unlike President Biden, the state of Texas remains committed to securing our border and protecting Americans. Let that sink in. It's like a state of emergency. It's like the state has been hit by a hurricane, and the devastation is everywhere, like a Hurricane Katrina, and he's turning to the federal government and saying, can I get some help? Will you please do an emergency declaration and send in some resources to help us? Silence is deafening from the Biden administration. So the governor has to turn to the National Guard. They have to beg for the resources. Crazy, isn't it? I just don't understand. But he's also pulling the resources of the good people of Texas. And as of today, or at least as of yesterday.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
123, the number may sound small, but this is a number that I can anticipate will grow. Washington Examiner reporting that a group of 123 Texas homeowners has already agreed to let the state put fencing along sections of their properties. Recall when Donald Trump wanted to build a border wall, the big claim and the concern was that, oh my God, we're going to have to allow all these land acquisitions. People are going to be fighting over it. They're going to want large sums of money because, of course, you have to compensate people when you take their property or take over their property for the purpose of public benefit. That makes sense. But in this particular case, these homeowners, these landowners are fed up with it, and they're happy to say, fine, go ahead and build a fence. You can protect my land. These homeowners, 123 of them, again, living in Val Verde County, have agreed to allow an 8-foot barbed wire metal fence be erected at the edge of their properties. Governor's office said 82 of the 123 people referenced have signed agreements with the state's military department conducting the program. Only 150 miles of the 1,250 miles of land between Texas and Mexico that they share currently has what they call a substantive barrier. Of the approximately 1,100 miles of fencing the state is responsible for, a large portion of that total has been addressed through an agreement with Texas residents. Texas identified 733 miles of border front land where it can build, and the Texas National Guard is going to carry out that project. So you wouldn't let Donald Trump do it. You wouldn't put any federal money for it. Texas is going to go it alone. And I'm willing to bet Texas will go it alone and get it done faster and more efficiently than the federal government and for a lot less money. 625 right now, 55 KRC. Happy Friday. Regular listeners know. And they may have even just turned the radios on now or tuned in through the internet to hear Dave Hatter give us all the tech news we can use. It is Tech Friday with Dave Hatter, brought to you by Dave Hatter's company, Intrust IT. Find them online at intrustit.com. Voted by the Business Courier, the best IT company for you, my corporate-owning friends, my small businesses. If you got a system, you need Dave. Welcome back, man. Hope you're well today. Happy Friday.
I am well, Brian. As always, thanks for having me, and happy Friday to you and Joe and all your listeners.
Real pleasure, as always. Let us start with why hackers love smart buildings. Before we get to this, I have to mention this because I don't want to forget, Dave. There was an article, and you probably saw it, about the upgrades to the Roombas, the vacuum cleaners that clean your house automatically. They go around the room, they scan the room and everything. There was an upgrade to one. They have they put in cameras, and they have programmed these things now to identify dog feces. So if it sees the dog poop, it knows what it is, and it will go around it rather than run over it and smear it all over. I guess may have been a problem. I don't know. I don't know one of those damn things. But they were talking about it represented a potential security challenge because here's a little vehicle that has cameras in it, and it connects to the internet and your app and all that. And it's like, red flag. Dave Hatter needs to know about this one.
Yeah, well, you raise an interesting point, Brian. And there are some famous videos and stories out there about Roombas and other, you know, I'm going to use the term loosely, robotic vacuum sweepers.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the dog has a little problem in the house, and next thing you know, it's everywhere because the thing ran through it and drug it around and smeared it on the walls, et cetera. So, yeah, it's, you know, one of the unintended consequences, first off, of the dog do. And then secondarily, to your point, so as they've increased the capability of these devices to avoid those kind of problems, well, yeah, now the thing is driving around with cameras. It could be seeing you who knows when or what's, you know, it just, all of these smart devices have unintended consequences in many cases. And, you know, getting to the smart building thing, this was the story from the Wall Street Journal, but many, many security experts have raised concerns about this. And it comes back to, now, from a smart building perspective, if you think about it, specifically if you're like a business owner, property owner, you got a lot of properties or a giant building you need to manage, obviously to the extent that you can put in sensors that would allow you to better manage the building, save electricity, lower costs, et cetera, I mean, I think that makes sense to people, right? So I understand why these kinds of concepts have become popular. And the same thing with industrial control systems. If you have a factory full of machines and you can save electricity, make those machines more efficient, you know, it's good for your business. But the problem always comes back to really two things. Much of the technology that makes the internet and it, especially all of these so-called smart systems work is sort of inherently insecure. You know, the internet, the technology that makes it work goes back to the late 60s. Security was not a concern at that time when you only really had four organizations who were communicating with each other at the beginning.
A bunch of college brainiac professors.
You know, so trying to retrofit security in has always been an issue. And then you always have to fight the battle too of the more secure I make something, the more difficult it is to use. You know, six locks on your door will make it more secure, but it also makes it more difficult to use. So, you know, the smart building concept is any of this Internet of Things, smart technology, as we add more of it in, going back to your Roomba example, it can bring a lot of convenience. It can bring, you know, create productivity gains, save money, but it's all hackable. And the more of this stuff we plug in, the more we're exposing whatever it is, plus anything it's connected to the bad guys. So, you know, I think the smart building idea, I totally get why property owners would want to do this, but, you know, it's opening up the possibility that a hacker could shut off the heating and cooling system at any given time, or, you know, turn it on so that you can't turn it off. There's a funny cartoon. I might've sent it to you and Joe. I'll dig it up and see if Joe can put it on the blog. That kind of demonstrates the problems of the idea of IoT. And it's like a picture, it's a cartoon of like a kitchen with a bunch of just common items in it, brooms, refrigerators, coffee makers, thermostats. And each one has a funny little caption of that device basically telling you how it's going to extort you or harm you if you don't send in so much in Bitcoin, you know, like, you know, you're going to be cold tonight if you don't send me $50. It's really quite funny and witty, and at the same time, kind of prophetic for the situation we're in. So, you know, as these buildings become smarter, as our cities become smarter, our factories, et cetera, you know, it does open them up to not only just outright failures in the software that makes all these things work because human beings write the software, but also you know, the opportunity for bad guys to hack it.
Well, and you know, so they're at it every single week. You remind us of the ways that that's going to happen.
Sadly,
appreciate that one. Coming up, I guess we're going to be talking about phishing attacks, emails, and there is some validity to Dave Hatter's repeated warnings about phishing emails. .641 at 55 KRC, the Talk Station. Coming up after top of the hour news, Mark Hoover. He's got the Catch My Killer podcast. We're going to hear about another unsolved mystery, the Bill and Peggy Stevenson case. Betsy Sunderman in 1 hour at 7:40. Councilwoman Sunderman talking about the job fair at the Hard Rock Casino, the Western Hills Viaduct, and, of course, the upcoming election. In the meantime, Tech Friday's Dave Hatter's on the phone, and we're going to move over to something Dave has been warning us all about now for, I would go, years. The phishing attacks, these are the emails that you get that have the link in them that Dave always warns you, don't click on the link, make sure it's the right link. Apparently, your advice and the advice of IT folks to their employees across the country is sinking in, and it's proving itself to be valid, Dave.
Yeah, so F-Secure is a company that makes antivirus software and other types of security software. One of their leaders, a guy named Mikko Hyppinen, is probably one of the most well-known cybersecurity experts in the world. I'm a big fan. I follow him closely. So, you know, just to give a little extra credibility to F-Secure, they did a recent report and said that in the first half of 2021, 33% of the reports, and this is employees getting emails saying, I think this might be phishing.
Yeah.
A lot of companies, either through third-party tools or through their own internal systems, will give employees the opportunity to report these emails. And I want to encourage people to do this. A great platform for this is something called KnowBefore. It's a service you buy from KnowBefore. They got a bunch of other stuff too, but they allow you to test your employees by sending fake phishing emails, and it gives you a variety of reports and insights. You can dial these things up to where they're extremely, extremely realistic and difficult to determine they're phishing. But one of the features is, you know, your employees get it and they can press a button and it'll say, oh yeah, you
failed
your job, or yeah, you failed here. Watch this training so this doesn't happen again.
And, okay, what is the name of this software? Because there's some business owner out there going, right now, I need that. That sounds like something I could use.
It's called Know, KNOW, BBE, and then the number 4, KnowBefore. Actually, Kevin Mitnick, who's probably the most famous hacker of all time, the FBI was after him for a while. They made a movie out of this guy. He is now one of their key executives, helping him figure out how to warn people and educate people to, you know, beat guys like him in
right.
his past life. So big fan of Kevin Mitnick too. So it's a good product, but I just wanted to point out. So what this article is getting at is, like, with F-Secure's technology, employees are reporting these phishing emails and they're seeing that 33% of the reports are really phishing. And, you know, I think there's two things about this that I think is important. A, it shows that people are wising up and that some of these tools and training and so forth are helping people understand phishing is a real thing.
Yeah.
It's happening all the time. The frequency of attacks are going up as more data is breached and more bad guys have more access to good emails, you know, or remember, this can also come to your phone via text. In some cases, they'll call you. So phishing, and, you know, on text, it's called smishing, because SMS, simple message service, is the real technical name of text. In voice, it's called vishing. But, you know, the frequency of these is going up. The legitimacy, or the perceived legitimacy, has gotten much better. The old days of, you know, where the grammar's all bad and it doesn't make any sense are gone. The bad guys are very good. It's stealing real logos, real text from real businesses. So they're sending out things that look very realistic. They've gotten very good at spoofing the email address or the phone number, so it looks like it came from a legitimate source. And, you know, of course, they're playing on your emotion when you get these things. It's an attempt to social engineer you. And one of the things that I thought was so interesting in this article is they said F-Secure's analysis shows some words and phrases are associated with a high risk of phishing. They include warning, your funds have, or messages for a trusted, or any kind of phrase like that, where, again, they're trying to play on your emotion. They're creating a sense of urgency that, you know, you need to do something right away. Click this link, go to this site, download this file. So, you know, I think the good news from this article is people are wising up, they're waking up, they're taking this seriously, and that's shown in the data F-Secure is collecting. But then the flip side of that is 66% are still getting through. So, you know, and it's so important to remember this is happening every second of every day. These attacks are not slowing down, and the actual messages that are being delivered continue to improve. They're getting harder to detect. So tools and training like no before can go a long way towards helping you protect your employees.
I just, in conclusion, I just wanted to let you know, since you mentioned no before, I was going to bring it up again. That's the name of that company, that software that tests your employees with very real looking emails. Eric, my Facebook friend, just said, my new IT VP is using it. It's amazingly annoying, but effective. So apparently there's someone out there that's already got it. Dave, don't go away, because I understand COVID-19 has run headlong into technology, and it didn't go well over at Walgreens and for a lot of people. Hang on, more with Tech Fridays. KRC, the talk station. Little electric guy. Appropriate song for pretty much everything Dave Hatter talks about. Dave Hatter, Tech Friday, final segment of that this morning. And we're going to talk about Walgreens. Data breach, what's going on here?
Yeah, this is an unfortunate situation. And, you know, I don't even know if I would call it a breach, Brian, because it's more about how their system for you to register for COVID-19 testing was not constructed very well and would allow someone who could determine an order ID, which is a 32-character now, a given, it's a 32-digit number. It's not likely you're just going to guess one of these. But the website, and it's really, their comments are interesting because it goes back to something I said in a previous segment about trying to balance security versus usability. So a security expert discovered that the way this thing was built would essentially allow anyone who could determine one of these order IDs to pop it onto the end of the URL that points to this website and pull up someone's information, which includes, you know, their name, their gender, a bunch of stuff. It's nothing too secretive. There's not like a social security number or a driver's license number or anything like that. It's to a large extent public information other than the stuff related specifically to the COVID-19 test itself, like the day you're supposed to be there and that kind of thing. But, you know, A, someone now knows you've gone to get tested potentially. For me, the story here, it's not so much about the data itself, because, again, there's nothing super sensitive in what's accessible. It just goes to show two things. And I'm a little shocked because, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a fan of Walgreens, but, you know, I use Walgreens. I'm a little shocked at their response to this, you know, and if
you are being influenced, if you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So the security vendors warned Walgreens about this, gave them some time to fix it. In the industry, it's typically common that you give someone 90 days before you make the information public so they have a chance to address it, right? And before it can be exploited, because once you make it public, bad guys, of course, will attempt to attack it. So apparently several different people reached out to Walgreens about this. They did nothing about it. Vox wrote an article about this. It's a media site, you know, and they gave them some time to deal with it, and apparently they didn't. And it's just kind of interesting that their approach was sort of like, yeah, we don't have a problem with it. Now, they did specifically address, and I kind of get this, Walgreens told Recode it was a top priority to protect its patients' personal information, but that it also had to balance the need to secure information while making COVID-19 testing, quote, as accessible as possible for individuals seeking a test, unquote. And you know, again, so the point is, like, I can just go to this website, punch in one of these codes and see whatever's there. There's no login. And I sort of understand that, right? If you make it too difficult for people to sign up, they might not get the test. This is a pandemic. You're trying to get people to get the test.
Yeah.
I understand the mentality. But then their attitude towards this, some of the comments they made and, you know, some of the, what the security experts told them and the fact that they still have done nothing to address this, apparently, it's a little shocking to me. I got to tell you, it kind of makes me rethink, like, would I really want Walgreens to have any of my sensitive information?
Because I agree with you completely.
Their attitude, as expressed at least in this one article, and the fact that they haven't done anything to address this, plus this site apparently is full of all kinds of third-party cookies, which means third parties could be exfiltrating some of this information. You know, they're doing it, of course, in theory, at least for the advertising revenue that would bring and the money that would get to these third party sites. But it's just, it doesn't seem very well thought out. It doesn't really feel to me like they're taking it seriously or, frankly, concerned about protecting their customers' data.
Let us look at it in view of almost like a doctor-patient relationship. I mean, you've got guidelines that protect your medical information, your records, and if your doctor's office had holes in its protocol, I think that might be some sort of major violation. And this is your pharmacist, basically, right? I mean,
you're right, Brian, and then there's the whole HIPAA aspect.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking about.
I don't think the information here would technically fall into like a HIPAA violation because, again, it's mostly stuff anyone could find out about you fairly easily, minus the date you're going to get the test and at which Walgreens. But it's just, again, it doesn't seem like they're taking privacy or security very seriously. And, you know, if they're not doing it here, where else aren't they doing it?
That it got to establish trust. That's where good faith, goodwill comes from. And if you don't have it, you don't deserve it, especially if you don't do anything to fix about it. Dave, thank you so much for what you do for us, my listeners and me, keeping us smart and in tune and helping us keeping our eyes peeled for what's going on out in the tech world. I look forward to talking with you, as I always do, next Friday. Between now and then, best of health to you and your family. Have a great weekend, my friend.
Thanks to you and Joe, Brian, and all your listeners, and I'll look forward to chatting with you next week.
Excellent. 6:56 coming up. We're going to talk about Catch the Killer series. This one, Bill and Peggy Stevenson described as slain in a brutal fashion. We're going to hear about that one coming up after the news.
Hear about it.
Talk about it.
If I hadn't heard the news earlier today, I mean, you were scaring me there.
55 KRZ, the talk station.
It's 7:06. It is Friday, and a very happy Friday to you. And always interesting conversations and always an interesting podcast, the Catch My Killer podcast with my guests, returning to the 55 KRC Morning Show. Welcome back, Mark Hoover. Happy Friday to you.
Hey, Brian. Happy Friday to you, too, sir.
And this one is really, really bizarre, man. Let's talk about the Stevenson murder. Bill and Peggy Stevenson, described by the Enquirer as slain in a brutal fashion, bludgeoned and stabbed. We're going back to May of 2011 for this one. Give my listeners a detail on this, because I got questions about this one.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been one that's really been kind of near and dear to my heart that I've really want to see solved because it's I mean, I know it's Florence, Kentucky, but I still consider it local.
Of course it is.
But, you know, but I featured this one on my episode 78 of Catch My Killer, and I interviewed their daughter, the Stevenson's daughter, Beth Stevenson, and I also interviewed Detective Coy Cox, who was headed up the investigation. So apparently what happened was Beth became concerned because she hadn't heard from her mom and dad, and both of them are 74. You know, they were elderly. So she sent her husband over to go check up on them, their Florence home, and when he arrived there, he found them both deceased. Somebody had, as you had mentioned, brutally beat and strangled them. And the thing was, according to the police, their bodies were staged. And they believed that the killer knew them and had probably spent some time. So not only did he kill them, but he stayed in the apartment or their house, their condo. And for I mean, usually, I think killers, when they kill somebody, they
get the hell out of Dodge, right? You just committed murder. Yeah. You run, you flee, you hide, right. Whatever you normally do. You don't hang out and then pose. This is the weird. He said the bodies were posed. Posed in what way? I mean, like sitting on the couch with their arms around each other or something? What was the story on that? Plus, the other information was that threw me off that each of the rooms in the home had also been, as they describe, staged and items moved about in a strange fashion. So what are the details on that?
You know, I found that really strange. And when I spoke to Detective Cox, he didn't really give me a lot of information on it because he keeps most of the information close to the vest. So he really didn't describe that, go into that too much.
Ah.
But I know, because that's one of the things that I that really got me was stage. What do you mean by stage? How were their bodies staged? And how was the whole house staged?
Well, and you know, I guess in the interest of justice and finding someone, I don't know, and I don't understand how Detective Cox, who's still working on this, from my understanding, I don't know how he thinks that keeping that specific element of information away from the public's consumption, you know, is in any way, shape, or form going to jeopardize how the case turns out. I mean, that's just a weird, weird element of it. And to not explain it is troubling to me. That's one of the things I was really hoping that you would be able to clear up for me here today, Mark.
No, but you know what, though? If you think about it, it's probably a good thing because think about this. Everybody thinks that's really weird and no one has any idea. If they ever run into a tip and somebody says, hey, I know exactly how these bodies were staged in the whole house, that person that knows that tip is going to be a legitimate person.
There you go. That's a good point.
So I think that's what Detective Cox's line of thinking is, and I think it's brilliant because, really, I mean, you know, people falsely confess to crimes.
Sure.
And this one,
yeah. Describe the room. Yeah, describe how you left the Stevensons when you left. I mean, if you're talking to a killer, or if they, like you said, somebody knows some bizarre detail that is really unique, then you may have caught your person. Detective Cox, apologies. Mark has just given you a pass that I understand. That's why I'm not a detective, Mark. I don't think about these things. But they were described as beloved, admired. Yep. They were helpful in their elderly years, I guess. Did they interact with the community? Were they involved with some sort of charitable organization?
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, the thing was, they had been part of their church for like four decades. But I remember, when Bill was alive, I remember reading a story in the Inquirer before he was murdered that he had started the Truckers Chapel Ministry. And that was a ministry catered to truck drivers that were busy so they could stop by. I believe it was set up in a trailer, a truck trailer, and, you know, truck drivers could come and they could pray and he would talk to them and offer them advice and counseling. So he wanted to reach out to these truck drivers. And that he started that, and I believe there's an Inquirer story because that's how I first heard of Bill Stevenson, because of the Truckers Ministry. And then later on, of course, you know, when I heard that he was murdered. But you know what I wonder, and I told Detective Cox, I really wonder if it was somebody to do with this ministry.
Yeah,
and that's because, you know, you don't truck drivers. There's a lot of them out there. You know, I mean, it's weird because you know, the door, there was no forced entry. So they believe that whoever killed them knew the Stevensons.
So. Yeah. And but, I mean, I guess, did you ask Detective Cox what it means when someone is so brutally, I mean, they were bludgeoned and stabbed. I mean, it's a crime of of anger. It reflects, you know, right. an element of hatred that you might not see, you know, with just like a single gunshot wound or, like a less painful way of ending someone's life. Like if you're there to liberate them from belongings, do you stab and bludgeon them to death? And then go on to stage the way they're imposed. The bodies were described as having been posed.
Right. I think like... I really think it was somebody that knew them.
Yeah.
Somebody, like you just said, it was very personal. And because to bludgeon and stab somebody instead of shooting them, that means you wanted to inflict pain. And then while you're probably doing it to one of them, the other one's got to sit by and watch it happen. So it sounds like somebody was really angry with them. Although I can't really understand why, because they were such a beloved couple, been part of the same church. They started the truckers ministry. But when I told Detective Cox about, or the daughter, I talked to them about, could it have been one of the truckers, you know?
Yeah.
But they told me that, both of them told me that really that may not be possible because they did not invite these truckers to their home.
True.
So they, for that, you know, just for safety reasons. So they kind of just kept meetings and conversations outside the home.
Yeah, and I get her point, but, you know, 2011, that's not that long ago, is pretty easy to even, I mean, we had the internet back then.
Right,
and,
right, to you find
know, the
out where they lived.
Auditor's
right.
office is online, you can punch somebody's name in there and easily find out where someone lives. It's a stalker's dream, those websites, Mark.
Right, oh yeah, it's sad. And you know, Detective Cox did tell me, well, make it hopeful, is that there is a DNA sample.
Oh!
But I did ask him, you know, have you submitted it to one of those databases to find?
Yeah, like 23andMe. Yeah.
Now he didn't go into further detail because he didn't want to tell me, but he said that for some reason this DNA sample cannot be tested that way because he said something about there not being the technology yet.
Oh.
He wouldn't elaborate on it any further than that, but. You know, but so it is good that there's DNA, but there's no donor identified. I mean, I believe it's been put through CODIS, but there's no donor.
Fair enough. Yeah. And I know they can get DNA off of literally anything these days,
right.
You know, like a cigarette butt or a glass. I mean, your body just leaves it everywhere. So, well, there is that's a glimmer of hope on that one. And Detective Cox is still actively sort of working on this. Is this considered a cold case at this point, or what?
Well, he says it's not a cold case. I'd asked him at the time of the interview. He was still on. I think he's near retirement, but he wants to solve this before he retires.
Oh, I can imagine.
But he told me, Mark, it's not a cold case. He goes, I am on this, and I'm putting a lot of work into it. Although the public may think that. You know, he's not doing anything. You know, he assured me that he is working his tail off to get this solved. And one other curious note was when I first heard about this, they have a nephew. Steve Stevenson is his name.
Uh-huh.
Their nephew. He was convicted of murdering a woman over in Indiana. So a lot of people thought maybe he murdered his aunt and uncle, but Detective Cox had ruled him out, told me no. No, it's not Steve. We talked to Steve, and we just don't feel like he killed his aunt and uncle.
All right.
And Beth, his cousin, doesn't think so. The family doesn't think so either. You know, they're pretty sure he didn't kill his aunt and uncle.
Well, it's certainly bizarre. A kindly elderly couple to have been, you know, bludgeoned to death and stabbed to death, and then all the bizarre circumstances around it. I, you know, if you're out there, Detective Cox, you're listening, I'd wish you the best of luck, and hopefully you will end your retirement with having solved this one. If anybody has any information that might lead to an arrest, a tip, call, I guess the number is the Boone County Sheriff's Office at 859-334-8496. Leave a tip, or if you're incarcerated, you can still help. 844-210-1111. I guess that's because incarcerated people tend to talk to each other, right, Mark?
Absolutely.
Mark, thank you for the time you spent with my listeners and me and your Catch My Killer podcast, which people can find. And we'll talk again about others. But if you know anything about Bill and Peggy Stevenson's murder, please get in touch with the Boone County Sheriff's Department. Mark, stay well, be healthy until we talk again. 717 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. Quick word for my friend Suzette Lozekamp, who is at Union Bank in the .722 here, 55KRC, the talk station. Coming up, Betsy Sunderman. Got quite a few things to talk to Betsy about. And in the meantime, I wanted to bring this one up in the few minutes I've got in this segment before we get to local stories at the bottom of the hour. University of Florida, we had dozens of students signing a petition saying that the United States Constitution should be abolished.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And the sad part about this, you know, you can get a student to sign anything. There was a petition to go around to ban H2O, you know, hydrogen dioxide. You know, it's like dihydrogen oxide or whatever. And you talk about how it's, oh, my God, you know, if you can word something in a way that people will sign a petition. This is just a straightforward abolish it. And the reasons for it reflect such an epic failure in our nation's education system and, a phenomenal success of those left-wingers seeking to undermine and destroy our country. One student, and Campus Reform is a great online site that goes around and does surveys like this and pays attention from a conservative standpoint, or dare I say even libertarian standpoint, just exposing the bizarre leftist nature of college campuses. So again, University of Florida, one student speaking with Campus Reform, it should be abolished. It's time for a new constitution. Okay? No reason specifically stated there. Another one, when asked, the time period was rich, old, white man, and that's exactly what that document says and stands for and vouches for. No. Well, it was a time period of white men, not all rich necessarily, but the document itself reflects a remarkable vision for the future. And it was written in such a way that allows for this flexibility that we have seen and this improvement in our conditions over time. That it was written during a period you couldn't find a place on the blanket planet in that period of time in the late 1700s when the Constitution was drafted that wasn't run by a bunch of rich old white guys for the most part. Dozens of students signed the petition. The outlet reported one student quoted saying, in terms of the Constitution being abolished, it has to be. It was written in the late 1700s. It wasn't written for the 21st century. Yeah, but we've been able to work with it up until, and it does offer the flexibility that allows us to, you know, work it into the 21st century court cases, you know, have been able to deal with issues of, oh my God, telephones, which didn't exist in the, when the white guys ran the place, and computer systems, and privacy, and First and Fourth Amendment issues, all in this era of modern technology. And if you look over time and you're a student of the Supreme Court or the realities of the Supreme Court, you will see that for the most part, our freedoms and liberties have expanded greatly over the past couple of hundred years. Greatly. I noticed that you're not allowed to own a human being anymore. There's a real nice development, isn't it? And boy, that Constitution provided for it. All men are created equal. And we have evolved over time where the word men is designed to and does include all people, which is exactly what it meant when the founders wrote it. 725, 55 KRC, the talk station. Please get your cancer screenings. It's cold. It's 7:29 right now. Happy Friday. Always happy Friday. Just tuning in. Remember, it's Tech Friday with Dave Hatter. He was on 1 hour ago. You'll be able to find his information on my blog page along with the podcast, 55krc.com. We're going to hear from Councilwoman Betsy Sunderman coming up in the next segment. Always enjoy talking with her. And got quite a few things to talk with her about this morning. And this right here may be one of them. The marina. Still no marina. Remember, I had completely forgotten that they're the leaders in their infinite wisdom in Cincinnati City, Cincinnati Park Board, had talked about putting a marina in. Anyway, they tabled the decision to start construction of the delayed Ohio Riverfront Marina project, angry over what it saw as City Hall's efforts to hijack the project. Sharon Coolidge from the Enquirer reporting on this one. Thanks, Sharon. We usually talk to her on the program once every couple of weeks. Instead of allowing the Independent Park Board to see detailed proposals or even renderings for the project, City Manager Paula Boggs-Muthing convened a panel to secretly pick the best company. In a time when Cincinnati needs more transparency, bad idea. Panel asked the Park Board to give the project a go-ahead based on a presentation by the panel at Thursday's Park Board meeting, where park board members got few details or answers to their questions about why they were being asked to approve it. Specifically, the board members asked for, but were given few details on how the marina would look. Okay. Two local companies bid on the project, H. Hafner & Sons and Queen City Riverboats. Both said they could build the marina for the $1.7 million the park board allotted. But H. Hafner & Sons offered the city more revenue sharing and offered more diversity in the workforce. So the panel, which is Cincinnati City Parks Deputy Director Jenny Mobley, Chief of Staff to City Manager Paula Boggs-Muthing, Kelly Carr, and Chief Procurement Officer Bobby Hageman, awarded the project to H. Hafner & Sons. What do you think? Hafner paid any campaign contributions or did anything? I mean, I know we got this corruption thing going on, P.G. Sittenfeld, at all. Just wondering, not accusing. Park board members unhappy with the process, so they were also concerned that Hafner & Sons had never built or operated a marina, while Queen City Riverboats actually had. Hafner's website says it's Cincinnati's premier landscape materials supplier since 1923. And Queen City Riverboats runs Rivertown Marina in East End. All five members of the board who were appointed by the mayor and supposed to be independent expressed concern about the selection process, saying business was never done with this way before. Board also tabled a project set to go in Mount Auburn because of the same secretive process in which the parkland will be sold, but the city didn't provide the sale cost. That is a nut coup. Apparently, billboard taxes in either court of the House Supreme Court yesterday blocked the city of Cincinnati's tax on billboard advertising, saying it violates the billboard operator's First Amendment rights. City enacted the tax on billboard advertising back in 2018 to help close a $2.5 million budget gap. I think that budget gap's gotten bigger. Anyway, writing for the Supreme Court, Justice Sharon Kennedy wrote the majority opinion that a selective tax creates the intolerable potential of self-censorship by the press and abuse by governmental actors aimed to suppress, compel, or punish speech. Seems interesting that it's a free speech case, doesn't it? And that they did mention the press. Anyway, the tax imposed on billboards, 7% on gross receipts generated by the billboard, or an annual minimum fee based upon the location sign, the location and the size of the sign. Apparently, it raised about $700,000 a year, a little bit more. Lamar Advantage GP Company and Norton Outdoor Advertising apparently control 90% of billboard signs in the city of Cincinnati. And they're the ones, of course, that sued to block the tax. Company said they did make it would make the operations unsustainable. You're taking away 7% of what they make. That could have been their entire profit margin. That was one of the things that they pointed out. Said their least profitable billboards would be unprofitable, and 70 to 80 of their 865 signs the company operates would have to be removed. First Amendment issue comes in because roughly 25% to 30% of the sign space is donated for public service announcements and the company's own speech, such as tributes to notable public figures. Kennedy said that the press includes not only newspapers, books, and magazines, but has been extended to many other media areas, including cable television and, by extension, billboards. Don't go away. We're going to be talking with Betsy Sunderman about the Hard Rock Casino job fair. Happy Friday. Brian Thomas right here. Beautiful morning out there. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you got some good plans for the weekend that will include you riding your motorcycle with us at the Fairfield Harley-Davidson Departure Point, the Dragonfly Foundation Motorcycle Fund. It's called Ride for Dragonfly. I'm going to be there, and I hope you can too. It's a wonderful organization helping families with children who've been diagnosed with cancer who are in the area for treatment. And as promised, without further ado, welcome back to the 55KRC Morning Show. Always great having Councilwoman Betsy Sunderman return to the program and tell us about all kinds of great things, or bad things as the case may be. But let's start off with something really nice. Welcome back, Betsy. Job fair.
Hey, I can't help it if I'm talking about good things or bad things. The news just happens.
It does, but let's start with something positive, and it's the Jobs That Rock Career Fair. Now, I know there's a lot of jobs out in the world, and you know, in years past, we would have had these conversations, and job fairs would have been packed with people because there were not as many jobs, and we now live in a time when there are, what, like 10 million jobs open in this country of ours, and not enough people that are apparently willing to fill them, so... What's this one all about? What kind of careers do we have going on here?
So I recently became friends, like a year ago, with the new head of the Hard Rock Casino, George Goldhoff. And I told him how I kind of always had a dream of being a blackjack dealer. I wanted to do this since college. It sounds like the coolest job. And my mom was a math teacher, and we used to go to the casino all the time to learn math. We did horse racing when we were little. I think it's great. So George told me that he's having a lot of trouble hiring dealers. And I said, well, how much do you pay them? And he said, $70,000. I said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, what are the qualifications? He said, you don't even need a college degree. I said, oh, my God, there's a job for $70,000 without a college degree, and you're having trouble filling it? Unbelievable. And he said, I know. I just don't understand. And I said, well, why don't we have a job fair? And we will... bring in people with high-end jobs and present them to the public. I see job fairs all over the city for kind of lower-end jobs, but why not have one? So we're having one for $50,000 and over, and I'm happy to have a lower-end pay scale job fair too. I'll have all the job fairs anybody wants. But for this one, we're going to focus on $50,000 and up.
I was just going to ask you to repeat that, and you did. So, I mean, you've got this is like a neon sign going, good paying job career fair, right?
Right.
$50K or more is going to be your salary for jobs that you get at this job fair. Boy, that is that is unbelievable. What's a very nice salary?
Yeah, exactly.
And then can I... That salary, and I'm guessing Hard Rock Cafe is going to pay you benefits, right?
Yes, they pay benefits, all that stuff.
So you get a career salary with benefits, And then if you're a dealer and you and somebody hits the mother load and wins at your blackjack table, they're allowed to tip you, right? Because I've seen that in movies before.
Yes. I think all the dealers share their tips.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why the pay is so steady, because you're not just depending on whether people win at your table. Everybody shares the tips, and, you know, overall,
okay,
everybody wins about the same amount, you know.
Gets about the same amount. Okay, and I think that's the fair way to do it, because it's always a cosmic crapshoot who gets the whales and who doesn't when you're at a table.
Exactly.
So, wow.
But that's a great, I mean, that's more than city council members get paid, right?
Yeah, but city councilor is a part-time job. Betsy, you know, you knew I was going to say that.
I agree, but no one agrees with us.
Yeah, well, at least you are the sane one that says, yes, no, city council is a part-time job. I understand.
It is.
All right, well, okay. How many do we know how many job openings there are?
In the city?
No, I mean at the career fair, the jobs that rock career fair.
At this point, we are recruiting businesses, companies.
Oh, to expand it.
So okay. This is going to be October 4th at the Hard Rock Casino at 5 p.m. And you have to be 21 to come to the job fair because it's at a casino.
Exactly.
So at this point, we are recruiting companies. So we're hoping to get Kroger and P&G and all the big companies. We have a few companies already that have really good jobs, including Hard Rock. So if any other people work for any companies and you want to forward this information to your HR people, or if you are the HR people, then please come. It's totally free for companies. Hard Rock is paying for everything. So we will set up a table for you. You can just bring your brochures or whatever you want to bring, and then we will bring the job seekers to you, and you can recruit people.
Well, business owners out there, this seems like an awesome opportunity to get some, you know, career-minded folks. Clearly, these are not necessarily entry-level jobs, but if you're looking at it as a dealer job, it is. I see that advanced manufacturing, business, IT, healthcare, hospitality, entertainment, and supply chain, transportation, logistics, all those sectors, consider it. Some were already signed up to be there. The information is on my blog page at 55KRC.com, Betsy, so people, that's one-stop shopping.
Oh, that's
for
so
folks.
Nice. Thank you.
So that taken care of. All right, pause at 7:45. We'll continue with Betsy Sunderman. We're going to talk about the Western Hills Viaduct, maybe get a reaction. .750 here at 55KRC Talk Station. Happy Friday to you. Coming up after the top of the hour news, I love springtime and fall time here on the 55KRC Morning Show because we get Ron Wilson in studio during the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to hear from Secretary of State Frank LaRose at 8:30 on the four-year redistricting map, and Jason Williams, Politics Extra, recognizing and pointing out to the Democrats there's no such thing as bad publicity. Why are they helping Tom Brinkman? And without further ado, let's turn back to Councilman Betsy Sunderman is on the line. Let's talk Western Hills Viaduct. It sounds to me like we've got it sorted out. The money that was previously put together, state, local, city funds, wasn't enough to cover the $300-plus million nut for the viaduct, but that 30% that comes from the 8.8% sales tax that people voted for the sort of bus levy, that goes to infrastructure, and sort of has said, Western Hills Viaduct, you're going to get the money you need.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Finally.
Finally.
Oh, my gosh. I drive on that thing every day, and I'm always just kind of crossing my fingers.
You know, honestly, I was going to ask you, I have yet to see any opposition to that, to the project itself. You'll hear people complain about the Brent Spence Bridge. We don't need a new bridge, blah, blah, blah. But I've never heard really that kind of elevated level of complaint, like, nah, the Western Hills Viaduct's fine. You know, we don't need to do that. Nah, why? That hasn't come up.
Yeah, when I first started on council, so I'm the only West Sider on council, first West Sider in 15 years on council. The last one was John Cranley. So I set up a meeting with the Department of Transportation and Engineering, and I said, tell me about the viaduct. Tell me if I should stop driving on the viaduct. I'm kind of terrified of it. And they said the only risk is that little crumbles come off of it, like's been happening, but they put those nets under it. They said the viaduct will not fall down. It could be there for another decade. It will not fall down. You can feel safe on it. So that made me feel a little better, but I'm still a little terrified to drive on it.
Yeah, and anybody driving underneath where those little tiny rocks are coming off knows that sometimes right. The chunks of concrete are a little bit larger than little tiny bits and pieces. But funding is there. Now, has there already been a redesign approved? They know what it's going to look like. We already know how much it's going to cost, so I presume all that preliminary work's been done.
I saw like a computer rendering of it, and it's really beautiful. It's one deck, and it has pedestrian walkways and bike walkways.
Oh, good.
Or bikeways or whatever you call it, bike lanes. So it looks really cool. It's going to be really thick, like 8 lanes or something.
Oh, wow.
So I know people are worried that I think it might be classified as a highway. I mean, it's going to be fast. It's going to be thick. So I just want to make sure that when it hits the neighborhoods, people aren't going 80 miles an hour heading into Price Hill.
All right. Well, I guess it speed differential kills Betsy, not speed. Anyway,
you're right.
Although, you know, if it's that beautiful, it's that efficient in terms of its ability to move traffic in and out, I imagine that's going to be a big shot in the arm for the West Side. I mean, an opportunity for more development will be brought about because of that.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. I mean, on the East Side, you have a million different roads going from downtown over to the neighborhoods. But on the West Side, all we have are these viaducts. And if we don't have functioning viaducts, you just can't get over to the West Side.
Right. Well, this will be a big boon to those folks up, you know, on the West Side. I just think of that whole neighborhood up there that's just ripe for development, up where the Incline Public House is, and even further over. So
that's
anyway,
where I live.
Yeah, I know. It gets better and better every single year, Betsy. I've never understood why that side doesn't look equally to Mount Adams, if you know what I mean. The view's the same.
I don't know why the developers aren't all over this place and putting up big condos and all
I know.
Houses. I mean, my daughters have downtown views from their bedrooms. It's beautiful.
It is. It really is. All right. Well, maybe this will be the impetus. When is the construction going to start? Do we have any idea about that, Betsy?
I saw the timeline before this big announcement was made, and they said they were going to – well, they've already started, actually. I mean, they're already digging in the ground. They're putting in big metal poles and things. We're trying to negotiate to buy part of the railroad that's kind of in the way. So, I mean, it's already been in process. I think they're going to break ground on it in 2022, on the big parts of it.
So soon, then.
And then Betsy, 5 years to build. I mean, it'll take a while.
I wish we had more time in the segment. I wish we had more time in the hour, but we are painfully out of time. Betsy, stay well. Have a great weekend. We'll talk again real soon. And next time you're on, we'll get a little more in-depth to the upcoming election. That'll be very soon.
Oh, juicy.
Take care, Betsy. Got to get to Lisa Baker and catch ourselves a Crime Stopper bad guy.
The left loves to kill American babies.
That's how they want to weaken our country.
55 KRZ, the talk station.
Does know. He's Batman. He's Ron Wilson. He is sitting right across from me, which on a Friday, I love that, man. Love that you come in the studio and talk flowers, gardening, what we need to do in the fall, preparation. We're not talking about politics. We're not talking about the Middle East. We're not talking about death, dismemberment, evil things.
Maybe a few plants dying.
It's getting ready for the... yeah, but we can deal with that.
We can deal with
quite that. Often, you know, if you buy from a reputable company and it dies in a period of time less than 1 year, you can have it replaced for free.
Or even more than a year.
Sometimes.
Even more reputable. They'll say, we'll stick with you. So
we bought a bunch of stuff from you guys last weekend, man.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I know you weren't there. We looked
for
you.
You don't have any returns. Your wife knows what she's doing.
I know she knows what she's doing. Our yard wouldn't look like it does if she didn't.
I love watching you just follow her around.
That's all I have to do.
Just push the cart or pull the wagon.
And I ask, she always asks, do you want to go with me? And, you know, it's like it's the same thing with grocery shopping. I got an option. And she's serious. You know, I don't have to be toted along and go with her. And sometimes I'll say, yeah, I really don't feel like going today. And she's like, that's cool. Yeah. I'll go. Well, she gave me the same thing. She says, I'm going to go up to Nate Torp's and I got to get those things because we had some landscapers coming over. We had quite a bit of work done the other day.
To get them to plant it.
Expanded some beds to get rid of grass that doesn't any longer have to be mowed and it's going to have flowers in it. And bought a couple of trees, a couple of arborvitae, got a, I don't know, can't remember what we bought. But, yes, I said, yeah, I'll go up there with you. I was just sitting on the back porch doing nothing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I did. She gets a cart. I just follow her around, you know?
Sure.
I'm going to get a couple of these. I'm like, go ahead. You all get right. Whatever you want. It's what I told you before you left. Get anything you want. It's okay with me.
Yeah. That's a good time for planting.
Yeah, it is.
So there you go. So you're in.
It's not like picking a color paint. You know what I mean? Like you need like a mutual consent on that because it's going to throw a plant, whatever. Buy what you want.
Looks good. Go for
put a smile on your face. Like what your plants of the I'm really looking forward to this. This looks like something butterflies would really like. I know we're going to do plants of the week last.
They will. All the pollinators.
It's beautiful.
Like this one. But, you know, I forget what I was going to even say now. But, you know, the thing about fall is a great time for planting. But I think the thing that's interesting is we get out to the local garden centers this time of the year. You know, we talk about planting things that flower late in the season for the pollinators and give you color late in the season as well, just for you and for the pollinators. But it gives you an opportunity to see what's still in flower. So when you go to the garden center, it's like when you were walking around,
see
things that are flowering that you may not have realized would be flowering this time of the year.
That's a good point.
So then you go and you look at that and you go, well, you know, I didn't realize that was available or this was available or I didn't realize what that was. I saw it somewhere. So, you know, when you visit, and I, you know, to do it every 3 or 4 weeks is actually kind of a cool thing because you see things that are in bloom throughout the season, but especially in the fall. And sometimes you may see things in the garden centers that are in bloom in the fall that you've only seen them bloom in the summertime or, you know, earlier in the season. Well, a lot of times with a lot of these perennials, you can cut those back after they're done flowering, flush up new growth, and they'll flower a second time for you. So then you realize that you can actually get two sets of flowers out of that thing. So, you know, just to go and experience it at any of the local independent garden centers in the fall is great because you see a lot of things that you may not have realized will give you great color. And obviously one of the things we're trying to do, I know folks want, you know, more year-round things happening in the landscape. So you're trying to find things that flower later into the year. And
right.
It becomes difficult because a lot of things start to shut down now. So you don't see the flowering, but you get out and you see all this stuff or you see things that you can make flower a second time. I think one of the things that surprises a lot of folks is they come out and they see goldenrod for sale in containers. And they're like, goldenrod? I mean, that just grows wild along, you know, and then invasive. It's not. Goldenrod, unfortunately, gets a bad name because of ragweed, which grows right next to it. And ragweed's what gives you all the pollen and all the issues. With goldenrod, the pollen is so thick and heavy it doesn't fly. It stays on the flower.
It's the first time I've ever heard that.
But goldenrod gets blamed for all the allergies in the fall when it's the ragweed. And the ragweed, you don't see the flowers. It's kind of a greenish color. So you don't see it in bloom, but they're kind of growing hand in hand.
Yeah.
So it gets blamed for that, and that's not it at all. And as a matter of fact, goldenrod will flower late into the season, and pollinators absolutely love it for a last source of pollen. Well, there's a lot of new varieties on the market, one of which was developed here at the Cincinnati Botanical Garden and Zoo, that are much more, they're smaller, more dwarf, some upright, some more of a cascading, that are really cool flowering goldenrod. So you kind of like, well, you guys are selling goldenrod in containers? So yeah, but, you know, think about what they do and how good they are for late in the season. They're beautiful flowers, easy to take care of. And again, they get thrown into the bad list because they grow wild next to those ragweeds out there, which makes you sneeze all fall season. So
That is the first time I ever heard that. Yeah. I always, goldenrod, I always thought that pollen. Pollen.
Yeah, it's not. And it is. It's such a heavy pollen, it can't even get up in the air. So the pollinators love it. You go to a goldenrod plant that's in flower, you'll see everything and his brother on that thing. I mean, literally, it's a hotel for, you name it, pollinators that love nectar. They're all over that thing. So, again, just another of the many options that are available for you out there in the fall. Asters. Not just the fall asters that you see sold with fall garden mums, but the actual, some of the other varieties, the woods and purple and all those that are truly hardy asters, the bigger growing asters that are late season bloomers, and the pollinators absolutely love those and eat them up. So that's why you do want to get out and spend a day or so, or a couple hours or whatever, but at your local independent garden center, see what's out there in the fall. I think you'd be really amazed as far as what's blooming. There's another tree that starts to come into flower right now called Seven Sunflower. Had it as our plant of the week about, 2 or 3 weeks ago. But it's a shrub that looks like a honeysuckle, and eventually you limb it up into a tree, multi-stem tree form. Exfoliating bark, kind of cinnamon color. Not much during the growing season. It's okay. But when that thing starts to flower, and now, just getting ready to start to flower, it's a white clusters of flowers. Pollinators are all over this thing, and it lasts a long time, and it's beautiful. But then those turn into these red bracts and these red seeds, which are absolutely outstanding right into the late fall season. But it's called Seven Sunflower. You don't see it very often. Huh. It's an old shrub, been around.
I love
for
the
a long
name.
Time. Yeah,
Seven Sunflower.
S-O-N, Seven Sunflower.
Yeah.
And so it's a neat plant. So again, that's the type of thing you'll see in your garden centers and nurseries when you get out and visit them in the fall.
You know, since you said the word sunflower, and I know the spelling is different in that regard, is that we've had such a kick out of Paulette planted what she thought were the dwarf type sunflowers.
How big did they get?
15 plus feet tall.
Yeah.
So we had these giant plate sized sunflowers.
Isn't that fun?
Cut them off, and we have them, they dry. Put one out on the railing of the porch, and the cardinals just come all day long. It's just one cardinal after another. It's been great to watch.
But again, when they're in flower, and those are all flowers, all of those seed, each individual seed is a flower on that sunflower head. You look at the pollinators on that thing. Besides the bees, they're all over that thing. As a matter of fact, they found out that sunflowers actually add something to the gut of the bee to help make it more able to fight off other diseases and other things out there. So when you're planting sunflowers, obviously you're providing the nectar and the pollen there, but you're also providing a great immune system builder for the bees, which they found out, which is really cool.
And then you got the bird seed.
Then you got the seed afterwards.
It's like the coneflower, same thing.
And you know what? What people don't realize, Walter Weldon, who is the beekeeper at the nursery, which has just given us a little bit of honey from the hives, and it's absolutely outstanding. But it's been a great year for that. He sent me an article, a month ago or so, about how sunflowers, pretty much everything of the sunflower is edible. I mean, you could actually take that sunflower head, when it was smaller, and put a little olive oil on it, grill it on the grill, and slice it up. I had no idea
you
could do that. Yeah, but pretty much all of it's edible, which kind of surprised me. But, you look at things like that, and it's fun to learn all of that. But you're right, sunflowers, this is the year of the sunflower, by the way. They pick a flower every year. This is the year of the sunflower. I still look at the sunflower. As a matter of fact, when we got into this COVID thing last year, getting into May and June, and we realized it was really here, and we were all locked down and whatever, one of my big pushes last year was just get out, buy a packet of sunflower seeds and plant them. If you don't do anything else this year, just plant sunflower seeds. And if everybody did that all around the country and everybody had sunflower seeds, everywhere you look, you would smile because it's the most recognizable flower that's out there. They're absolutely gorgeous. There's so many great varieties. It's phenomenal. Some of these new hybrids that flower all summer long, like the Sunbelievables and the Sunfinities, those things you plant in the springtime, and they have smaller flowers, but they flower all season long for you. So, so many great varieties of sunflowers. It's crazy.
That's my daughter's favorite flower. We bought an outdoor bench. I don't know if you've been to the Crone Conservatory, clearly. We talk
absolutely
about that all the time. Those benches that they have up there, the hummingbird bench, same company. And they have one that is sunflowers, and it's a sort of a whole grouping of them. And there's other, and it's really beautiful, and it's bright, and it's colorful. And that was the main reason I thought of my daughter, my wife, and kind of bought that on the DL and showed up and had put in the backyard. It looks great. Sunflowers are awesome,
but they always make you smile.
Missed that field that wasn't planted this year, so maybe next year
we'll see. We never know.
8:15 right now. More with Ron Wilson. Of course, you tune in every. I know you do. I don't even have to tell you this. You tune in, listen to his program every Saturday morning here at 55 KRC Talk Station. It's always on in the Thomas household when I come down from sleeping. But Herbert Motors has been around for more than 75 years. They are awesome at what they do.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's 820. 55 KRC, the talk station. And a happy Friday to you. Say it, Joey. 1-4 indeed, right? It's got sunflowers in it.
You got it.
John Newsom, good man, just sent me a picture of his wife's sunflowers. Of course, she got them in Nathorpe. It's just beautiful, beautiful, sensational. I remember you talked about those.
There's a whole series of those out there now. They're phenomenal. So, and there's more coming next year. I saw 3 or 4 new ones that's coming next year, too. So, yeah, they're great. Big shrubby thing, and they just flower all summer long. So, hey, I got to put a quick shout-out to Mary from Coleraine. She listens to your show all the time.
Hey, Mary.
Listens to us as well on Saturdays and sends me a lot of emails. They have some property out in the Coleraine area and do a little farming and things like that. She's a big gardener. And I said they were listening last Friday, and when you went into the your sleeping thing, when you sleep in.
Oh, yeah.
They were looking at each other because I didn't say anything during that time, wanting to know what I was. I said I was looking back at Joe Strecker off to my left. And she said they were cracking up as they were drinking their coffee.
Oh, good.
Kind of spit it out a little bit when you started doing it.
The nom 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 thing. Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny because someone posted a picture of their toddler, infant toddler, you know, maybe like 12, 18 month old sitting in their high chair kind of deal, with a really messy face and his t-shirt said nom nom nom. Yes.
What's cool?
It's a yummy sound. That's all that is.
Well, she said they were cracking up. She says again, and you said you didn't say anything. And I said, I was looking back at Joe Strecker trying to figure out where we was taking this thing. But she was interesting. She's kept me posted. They have turkeys. A big
Joe said he knew you were waiting for him to make a sound bite. I know. I just caught myself. I almost used an FCC non-compliant word
easy
for
now.
You too.
But she has more turkeys this year out there than they've ever. She had, there's been some hens there, and they had their little broods, and there's a ton of them. She sent me some pictures, and they were like cattle grazing in their field.
Wild turkeys.
Oh, something, yeah. And so they roost up in the trees in front of their house, and then they fly back down in the morning. She's got pictures of video of them flying back down in the morning, and then they just work around the whole property and back up to the trees in the evening. It's kind of interesting to watch that. And that's something that's become a little bit more of a nuisance in some of the gardens. Because turkeys could do a real number on your landscape. I mean, they'll go through and tear some things up when they come through eating a few things. So.
It's a large bird.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool to watch all that stuff. But anyway, she was out yesterday, and she said we were just cracking up when we went through all that stuff. So I explained to her what it was. Right. So anyway, hey, real quick, Army warrants, we talked about those last week.
Yes, we did.
Remember we were talking about, you know, would we get that second generation or not? Well, they're finding out that we may have a few second generations out there. As a matter of fact, some of the golf courses that had gotten them found masses of eggs on like their flags. And some of the bats, wow. Yeah, they'd actually laid eggs already. So the point being is from egg laying until adult stage, I think it's 42 days or something like that. So there's some that may have hatched out a second time. It, you know, 42 days, and they started doing some research. At 70 degrees, it starts to knock some of them back. At 64, it really starts to knock them back. They're that tender to cooler temperatures.
Oh.
But unfortunately, we've been staying very warm. So it's kind of extended the opportunity for them to have this second generation. I don't think it's going to happen, but you never know with insects sometimes. But I think the thing to remember is just keep watching, keep looking. If you had them, definitely keep watching the turf to see if you – and they're really small at first, so it's hard to see. So it's almost get down your hands and knees. But there's that real slight chance it could be that second one. But, yeah. Again, once it gets cold, once it drops below 60 degrees, they're done. So we will be finished with them, and they'll all get killed out. So it's not something that will carry over. But now we're saying maybe we might see a little bit here and there of the second generation.
Keep your eyes open
for it.
And for finally, before we part company, because I got Secretary of State Frank LaRose coming up in our usual final third segment.
Good for you.
Plants of the week, because that's
this
a beauty
is, this
right
is
there.
This is called Lespediza. It's an old shrub, but there's a lot of new varieties. This one's called Gibraltar, and this is a woody perennial, I call it. It's a shrub, but yet you kind of cut it back in the springtime. Sometimes it'll die back and flush up a whole new plant. But the old Lespediza can get 6-8 feet tall and wide. But it flowers like this starting about 3 or 4 weeks ago and continues right on through the fall season. It's a kind of a rosy red flower, kind of a little maroon to it. Pollinators absolutely love it. Just covered with flowers, up and gracefully weeping back over again. Absolutely wonderful. Again, an old shrub.
How tall?
When people see it, this particular variety about 5 to 6 feet high and wide, so it's pretty controlled. And if you cut it back in the springtime, it may stay a little bit smaller than that. It's called Gibraltar, but the name is bush clover or Lespediza. There's several selections out there for you, but this is a really cool looking plant. I love the color of it, and the flowers are absolutely outstanding. A great addition to your perennial garden or pollinator garden or whatever it may be for, again, late pollen and late flowers for those pollinators, and a great show as well. Lespediza or bush clover, and that's called Gibraltar.
Fantastic. It is a pretty color. Yep. I really like that. Ron Wilson, thanks for what you do. Thanks for spending time with my listeners and me on the Fridays in the spring and fall here on the 55 KRC Morning Show. And, of course, every Saturday morning all year long. He's nationwide. Syndicated program, best gardening program on radio.
Thank you, sir.
Ron Wilson. Plus your website.
RonWilsonOnline.com.
All the information you need.
Thanks,
and if you
Joe
don't
Stricker.
Have it there, you know how to get in touch with him.
There you go.
8:26 right now. We're going to hear from Secretary of State Frank LaRose about the 4-year redistricting map and Jason Williams on why are the Democrats promoting Tom Brinkman. 8:26, time for Chimney Care, Fireplace, and Stove, and a great word for them because they're great people and they are protecting you, watching out for your safety. As long as you watch out for your safety by making the phone call to the Chimney Care, Fireplace, and Stove to schedule that annual inspection of your chimney. Whether it's attached to a freestanding stove, a regular fireplace, or a pellet stove. Joe Strecker's got one of those pellet stoves. Those are self-feeding, by the way, and Chimney Care, Fireplace, and Stove does service those. So if yours is having a problem, it's not feeding correctly, or there's something else wrong with it, then just call them up. They'll come out and fix it. And they will do that for everything else. Cap and damper replacement. They do chimney waterproofing. They'll put a brand new fireplace and chimney in your place if you need it done. Matter of fact, they did that for us. We had a really, really just awfully, I'll say crappy, builder special fireplace when we had the house built and Chimney Care Fireplace and Stove. Whoa, did they exceed expectations on that job? Beautiful work. A-plus with the Better Business Bureau. You can count on them as I have, as so many people have since 1988. But call for the inspection. 248-9600, 513-248-9600. Take 40 right now here at 55 KRC Deep Talk Station. It is Friday. Everybody who regularly tunes in to the 55 KRC Morning Show knows that I am now going to be talking with Jason Williams from the Cincinnati Inquirer. Find him online at cincinnati.com. Recommend you get a subscription so you can stay up on local issues, including the upcoming all-important November election, which is just going to be, it's just so unbelievably important. Jason, welcome back to the programs, my friend. It's good to have you on.
Brian, thank you so much. It's a beautiful Friday.
It is.
Great to be back with you.
And I guess I like the headline, your column, Why Fighting Conservative Tom Brinkman Could Backfire on Cincinnati Democrats. I guess that comes under the rubric of there is no such thing as bad publicity. So with them talking about Tom Brinkman so much, they're really elevating his name recognition and therefore perhaps getting him elected.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, he's still, I think, a big underdog, a conservative, and who has an entrenched, conservative record and reputation, which Tom has always been consistent, and you got to respect that no matter where you stand on the political spectrum. But it's tough for someone of that political ilk to be elected in the city of Cincinnati, which.
Yeah.
The Democratic endorsement slate, it seems to be getting stronger and stronger as each municipal election goes by. However, if you look at the 35 candidates, and his is one of the names that stands out that you recognize among, I don't know, half dozen maybe. And so when you're talking about a crowded field of mostly people you don't recognize, you don't know, and if you are willing to go in there and vote not just by what the Democratic Party tells you to do, it's potential for Tom Brinkman to rise up there. And again, it's going to be tough, but it's why would the Democrats try to help him? And I think that's all they're doing by fighting him. And Brian, this happened, I guess it would have been Wednesday night. I think my column posted Wednesday morning. But Wednesday night, there was a meet and greet for Cincinnati City Council candidates at a restaurant in over the Rhine. Tom Brinkman was introduced. He was booed. He was booed by the crowd.
Wow.
And it's like, I mean, number one, stay classy, everyone. But number two, it's like, again, you want to keep, bringing attention to this guy, huh?
Well,
do you realize
is it
what you're doing here?
Maybe they
don't. Maybe it doesn't matter. There's probably, at the end of the day, given the how blue the city has become.
Yeah,
it maybe doesn't matter. But
let me ask you this:
it makes you scratch your head from a political strategy standpoint.
Well, let me ask you this: if it was Betsy Sunderman who walked in the room, I doubt that they would have stood up and booed her. Isn't the booing maybe more a reflection of his getting that charter amendment and the signatures needed to get that on the ballot?
Well, I think it's a reflection of the charter amendment. I think it's a reflection of all of his years of fighting City Hall as a co-founder of Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
And you put all those things together. But as you know, like, Tom Brinkman is as nice of a gentleman as you're going to meet, and he is not a fire and brimstone kind of politician, and he's out there shouting and yelling at people on Twitter, and he's going to go on to the council, and
he's not Trump,
Donald. Like, that's just not his style.
Right, he's not
his
a Donald Trump politician.
Stand up for his conservative principles, and that's what he's done throughout his career.
Yeah, and I was honestly pleased to see him make it on the ballot, in spite of the division between the panel, the 2-2 split. But they did it as to a Democrat, they did it for a Republican, and ultimately Frank LaRose, I believe, and I think you agree, did the right thing, just pointing out that the error really was not a substantive error, and it shouldn't have kept him off the ballot. But we have now 34 total?
35
total. Hmm. And a very short window of opportunity to find out who these people are and what they stand for, Jason?
Yeah, middle of September already. I looked up the other day, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, it's September 15th. And it's like you wonder, like, oh, where are the mayoral candidates here? And where is this campaign? And what is the defining issue? And I know we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
But certainly, I think it's time to start asking questions too, from the standpoint of I'm speaking only for myself, but time for a journalist for this journalist to start asking some questions. It appears
I'm with you. And of course, you can get Sharon Coolidge to help you out in that task, or anybody else from the
Inquirer.
Absolutely. I know the mayoral debate, but will there be any debates among the candidates? I know you're not going to ever be able to get 35 people in one room and be able to get any information of substance out of any of them, given, heck, with that many people any period of time. So how are we going to go about that element of it? Is it just going to be a one-on-one sit-down and ask people pointed questions about where they stand or what their ideas and visions are?
Are you talking about from the Inquirer standpoint?
Well, yeah. I mean, how are you going to go about it? I mean, I haven't.
You know, as a columnist and opinion writer, like, you know, I'm not a part of the editorial board, or obviously, you know, I'm not a beat writer on the city hall. I haven't heard of any candidate forums or debates among the council members.
Yeah.
I will say, coming up Tuesday night at Xavier, 7 p.m., and people can certainly, there's seats available, that the Inquirer is hosting the first mayoral debate.
Right.
Again, that's coming up this Tuesday at Xavier Stentoff Center.
I'm glad. And, I'm glad about that one, because, you know, I've been pushing David Mann because of his level-headed, gentlemanly fashion approach to politics, and I got all kinds of issues with Avtab Perval. But I'm glad that they're going to be, you know, I mean, we got two Democrats to choose from. I just want to see what differentiates the two. You know, I want to know what policy things, you know, David Mann said wants to go in one direction. I want to know where Avtab wants to go and how much they agree on and disagree on. So there is that forum, that opportunity. Cintas Center next Tuesday. In honor of my birthday, right, Jason? That's why you did it then.
yes. And go on Cincinnati.com, search the mayoral debate, and that way people can go and find it. You have to get a ticket.
Right.
It's a free ticket. You just have to register for it. And I think because there's limited available seats. And you just got to register ahead of time for that free ticket. And you're in. And I think, you know, Brian, this is, even though it's an earlier debate, I think, than what maybe typical debates would be, which usually you'll see those more in October.
No, I'm glad
ahead
it's
of the November municipal election. I think this year, given how quiet the campaigns have been, I think it's incumbent, very important for this debate to be this early.
I agree completely.
And at the end of the day, I don't think it's not that early, because early voting is coming up here in a few weeks.
No, without question. I mean, and maybe it'll generate some interest and some, some follow-ups. For example, you know, why didn't you follow up with that question? Or how did you let him get away with this?
Yep.
Or, you know, maybe an opportunity to, you run into David Mann even on the street and say, David, I heard your answer to that question at Cintas. I want to ask you a question about it. These are politicians. They're supposed to be able to respond to these things. And I am looking forward with great interest to get the reporting on it, how it goes. And final question before we part company today, Jason Williams from the Cincinnati Inquirer. Will the general public be able to, like, leave a question, or is there an opportunity for them to present questions to these candidates, or is this all Inquirer question driven?
I don't know. We usually, and again, I don't run these things. I'm one individual employee. But we usually typically have had an opportunity where people can submit as they're following on the social media, Facebook live stream. I'm not sure how the exact details of that now, but I would ask people to stay tuned. And certainly if they do feel like there is a question that they would like asked, email me and I'll make sure it gets in the right hands.
Perfect.
JWilliams@Inquirer.com.
There you go. You've got access to the man, JWilliams@Inquirer.com. Jason, thanks so much for your time, as always, every Friday. I'll look forward to the next Friday, and best of health to you and your family between now and then.
Thanks, Brian. Have a good weekend.
You too. It's 8:49 here at 55 Care CD Talk Station. Time for me to mention your wellness center.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster film in the last decade, then chances are that it's been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. In Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, investigative reporter Tiffany Meyer reveals how the CCP has infiltrated major studios. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free.